So I want to say just a couple things by way of introduction to what I'm going to share today. First of all, I recognize that it's an incredible privilege to have your own work office. Most of my career, I didn't. Actually, my very, very first newspaper job, I did have my own office, but I had nothing on the walls that I remember because it was right above a bakery, and all I remember from those 2 years is the smell of baked goods coming up into my office constantly. I have no visual image of that room at all. But after that, I had no art that I can remember, no space that I can remember. I had one of those little carrels and an open office plan, and you know, you're lucky if you get a photograph of your family and a couple of New Yorker cartoons. I keep this here to remind me. This is one of my oldest New Yorker cartoons that was up in the office and is frayed around the edge. It shows two guys at a bar, and one of them is saying to the others, before I do anything, say anything, or try anything, I ask myself, is it in the best interest of baseball? I know I'm not the only person who feels that sentiment, but so to finally come into a place where I have not only my own office, I actually have two offices because I have one at home with a whole completely different set of artwork, and you know, that's the payoff for having a room for your kids to stay in when they come visit. All the rest of the time it's your office. But I want to talk about my office here, which some of you have seen. And the other thing I have to say by way of introduction was this was originally supposed to be the service of August 4th, which was going to happen a few hours after I returned from vacation with Michelle. So I was not planning to do a lot of writing and preparation for this service, and it was designed to be one involving a lot of participation from the congregation thinking about the offices that you've been in. Well, now I've had, because we had to flip services and Crystal Brown needed to be on that date for the wonderful dance service that we had here. Now I've had 3 more weeks to think about it, and I've actually realized there's a lot to say. and so I'm gonna try and limit some of what I wanna say, but I do also wanna to share some of the fruit of the extra thinking time that I have. So I wanna start with the overall look of the office itself. For those of you who've been in there, it's a kind of a greenish color, kind of an indistinguishable greenish color. And the importance of that to me is when I moved here and that became my office, and that was the first time that space had been the minister's office, the facilities team kindly said to me, what color do you want it to be? And I said, well, I didn't have anything particular in mind. And somebody on the team said, well, we still have some paint left over from the sanctuary. And so the color of my office is the original green that was back there until it was just made grayer last year to show off more things. The green was a little bit a color that a lot of things didn't look as good against it as against this kind of a background. So that was the reason for the shift. And the gray brings out the pillars and things like that. But I liked the idea of the green reminding me that what was going on in my office was completely tied to what goes on in this sanctuary with you. And so I loved that symbolism, even though, because of the space and the light, it never looked like the same green that was here. The other thing about my office is that it has some high-hanging windows, which the light comes in brutally at different times. So when you go in, you'll often find, in place of shades, things like old drawings of the CVUS building plan standing up in my windows to block the sun from coming in. It does lend a certain kind of color and style to the office. It's not really intentional art, it's really shade. And I have my stoles like out on open hooks. I don't have a closet, so I like to do things that some people would say lend to clutter, but I think lend to color in the office. So that's general. Now, the other thing I have in my office is I have congregational art. And so those of you who know Pat Todd will recognize her style. She does a lot of pastoral scenes around the area. And Pat kindly lent me this pastel. And so that's up in my office. And if you're sitting on the couch, you look right across the room at Pat's pastel. And I often have random children's things over up. So this, I can't even remember which child did this at which session, but it's been up in my office for a while. And I had for a while over the couch, which I inherited, so that I didn't choose that color, and it's kind of a strong purpley-red kind of thing. I had a wonderful photograph that Paul had lent me of the 1963 March in Washington, which Paul was there as a teenager, and he staunchly maintains he can show me which person in the crowd is him. And I've looked, and whoever he's pointing to doesn't look like he looks now, so I have trouble making the connection. But I believe him, because I know he was there. And that was, well, you'll get a chance to talk.
My wife says it's me.
Yeah, well, okay. And I would not want to quarrel with Francis on final authority. Francis says it's him. I felt that this was a really treasured memento, and I felt nervous the whole time I was in the office. So I eventually asked Paul to take it home. And Chris had a couple of his paintings that he offered at a church auction quite a few years ago. And this was one that I forget for what reason it was left over. Maybe he didn't show it, but he offered to let me have that in the office. And it has colors that go really well with the couch. So it sits over the couch, and the people who are there in the room don't see it, but I see it. And so any of you who've ever dealt with people who decorate offices tell you that abstract art is the way to go because it encourages thinking. People have to put something into it, especially if you're in an office where you're trying to create collaborative work. They encourage people to buy abstract or semi-abstract art. And this is very abstract, and I had not read Chris's artist statement when I put it up, but it's also, as he says in his artist statement, very organic. These are old boards. Chris was living in a log cabin in the Smokies, or maybe the mountains of Virginia, that he had built at the time he did these. And it's been in my office, and no one has ever agreed on what it means, and I think that's a good UU thing to have in your office. And I don't know if it'll be there indefinitely. I don't know if that couch will be there indefinitely, if the next minister will want that. But I love having the ambiguity of Chris's art there and what it says about knowing the transformation Chris has undergone from trying to be a professional artist to being a policeman and a special kind of policeman in our community. It says a lot about the potential for all of us to become different. But as that quote said, we carry everything that we ever were with us. So part of what makes Chris the policeman he is that he is the artist that he was. And the last thing I'll just say about that is that Chris has been invited to put up some of his paintings at the new coffee shop opposite the Tire Center, but he doesn't have a date yet. I kept bugging him this week for an announcement, but he doesn't have a date that he can announce that. But eventually, we will see some more of Chris's art that's come out of the closet. My office also has some spiritual, what I would call spiritual art, and it's not always obvious what that is. So this that was on my pack from the climate march when I did the first and the last day walking from here to Bristol and then from Middlesex into Montpelier. Everybody had different kinds of artwork that the art group had made for the march, and this is my memento of that. But I think that climate justice is a spiritual issue. So for me, this is spiritual art in my office. This looks like it's just kind of a fun map, but it's of the Isles of Shoals, and right here in the Isles of Shoals is Star Island, opposite Smutty Nose and Appledore. And Star Island is the Unitarian Retreat Center, and lots of people have gone there for vacation, but you also go for the really amazing evening chapel sessions in the old stone chapel on the top of the hill that has no electricity of any sort, so it's only lit by candlelight. It's a very, very spiritual place. So the whole history of the Isles of Shoals and of Star will immediately evoke, for anyone who knows it, a spiritual feeling when they walk into my office. The other thing I have in my office, two other things that I consider spiritual art. Some of you will, maybe Carl can walk around with this and not tip it. I don't even know where it came from, but it's a little sand garden with stones. Now, I've violated the spirit of the sand garden by putting too many things in it. A sand garden really should only maybe have a couple of stones in one place and be raked. I have a Buddha holding a golden fowl of some sort. I'm not sure if it's a chicken or goose. It's in one hand and eggs in the other. And to me, I sometimes ask people, what does this mean to you? And to me, this Buddha is smiling like the smile, the end all smiles. And I'm saying it's because he just figured out which came first, the chicken or the egg. But really, if I was maintaining the spirit of the sand garden, he shouldn't be in there. But sometimes I think on our spiritual journeys, we do have to mix up things to make some progress. So that's why I've resisted moving the Buddha out of the sand. And someday may come. And then the other thing I want to share, I was at a UU district meeting, and I found a retired director of religious exploration who was making these pagan earth wheels. And it's really hard to see, but around the outside are all of the Celtic holidays. In the inner ring are the months, and then in here are the seasons. And she has different kinds of collages and images that represent the different things. And if it's flat, you can just keep rotating it so the current season is always what's up in terms of the writing. Or if it's on the wall, it's just a beautiful image. And so Carl can walk around and show you this. The last time Carl was my worship associate, he had to do hardly anything. So now we're evening it out. and so there's those categories of spiritual art. Then there is family art. Now, everybody has family art if you have your office. I actually, though, had a mother who was trying to do art for a lot of her life. So. And at the end, when she couldn't really do it, we used to do things together. So she was very interested in color and inks. And so she would make these things and make different prints of them. And then I would go out and we would cut them up into different size things. And I would work with her on the names. Some of you may remember we auctioned off one of her drawings that had some fruit that was a color pencil, and the fruit was very well drawn, and the rest was kind of gray, the limb and everything like that. It wasn't finished. It was like a study. And so I made up the title for the rest of her life, Eve Loved Fruit, when we sold that. And someone here has it. Who? Do you remember? Oh, you guys have it, yes. So Steve and Priscilla bought it. But anyway, so Mom often was just only interested in the inks and the colors, and I was sort of interested in stories that I found in them. So like this was like inspired by a canyon, and I saw a horse's head in the canyon. And I never figured out what the story was, but of course, once someone has pointed that out, we called it the horse's head painting. And this one, because of the little yellow frame there, always felt to me like some family cottage out in the country. That's the window, and the garden is really kind of a mess because you're not there enough to take care of it. And so I thought there's, you know, a wonderful family story buried in that one. So those are up on the wall together. And then the other piece of mom's art I have is three different prints, the same one, and I cut them up and took pieces from them and assembled them to make something that felt like its own artwork to me. And if you get a chance to come up and look at it, there was one piece in the corner of this much lighter color that sort of went off into the distance. And I ended up lining them up here, here, and here so that the whole thing started to feel like it went off into the distance in that direction. So for the last 15, 20 years of mom's life, we did collaborative art when we were always together. She provided the form and the color and the shape, and I provided the looking at it in different ways and cutting it up and moving it around, and it was a lot of fun for us, something that brought us a lot closer. And so we all have that kind of family art. Sometimes it's not quite that formal. And I included the quote from the poet, Kevin Young, for that person. He had those blue bottles on his windowsill, and that was from the old African-American tradition of guiding away spirits. Now, if you just walked into the room, you wouldn't have seen that deep cultural connection to all of that. But I think those of us who get a chance to have an office, those kinds of things kind of creep into it, and it's part of what makes it rich, which brings me to the last thing I want to talk about before I open it up to yours. So there's a quote here from the same John O'Donohue that I read an earlier quote that I want to read to you. And it starts out, "Landscape is the ultimate where. And in landscape, the house that we call home is our intimate place. The home is decorated and personalized. It takes on the soul of the person who lives there and becomes the mirror of the spirit." So home is this really intimate place within the landscape. And like that earlier quote I read to you, once you've come out of a home, you're not alien to anywhere, any landscape. So what is true of the home, I think, is true of the office. If you've got a special relationship to your office, a spiritual relationship to your office, it becomes a mirror of your spirit. And in some places, more than a mirror, kind of a wellspring of questions for your spirit. So that's what I try to set up in my office. And the thing that pulls it all together for me now, which you wouldn't necessarily notice if you just walked in, is this work. Now, this is called As the Crow Flies, and it's behind my desk. It's one of the smaller pieces. This is a print. It's the only print, one of one, because it's really a painting, which is actually smaller. And the artist who joined us here today, Bonnie Vaird, who's a friend of ours, was kind enough to make this print for me because I showed up at the art opening too late to buy the painting. It was gone already. And I said, I need this so much. This is like everything. Bonnie paints mostly landscapes, which is, and that quote I read you, the first line of that quote, is on Where the Crow Flies, the exhibit opening material. And I went and found the rest of the quote to share with you. But in her landscapes, she's very concerned with the atmospherics, the light, and most of them actually are done of the Otter Creek Valley, one place or another. So they're very local. Bonnie lives in Pittsford, or is it Chittenden? Chittenden. And I love this image of the clouds being this huge bird moving towards wherever they were moving. And the idea of As the Crow Flies, I don't know, because I haven't talked with Bonnie about this, I don't know how deeply she thought about the symbology of the crow. The crow is one of the most complicated totems in all of religion. you know, it's associated with death. It's associated with the transition from life to death because it's carrion eating bird, but it's also associated with intelligence, with foreknowledge of the future, with transformation. And there's so many different crow stories. And as the crow flies could simply be about the origin of that sentence, that idiom, or it could be much more complicated about spirituality in general, and I like the ambiguity of that. The simple explanation for as the crow flies is what? Who knows what it means? The idiom is normal. The shortest distance. And of course, even that is based on a metaphor, because while crows don't swoop and dive all over the place like swallows, they don't actually fly in a straight beeline. But there's some belief that the origin of this phrase actually is related to the fact that crows get very nervous over water and seek out land. And in the sailing world, the crow's nest, which is the lookout at the top of the ship, actually refers to the fact that a crow would be released from there and people would see which direction it was going, and that's how they would figure out where land was. So as the crow flies has to go with this homing instinct towards land, where we do all that we do together in sharing and loving and building. So that's part of why this means so much to me, my office. All right, so I warned you, I had more time to think. I talked too long, but I do want to have some time for people to share their thoughts about office art before we wrap up. And Carl's going to run around with this. But if you don't want to wait for Carl, you can also come up and speak from the podium or whatever about what office art can or has meant to you in your life, in your spiritual life. Oh, and Anne has to, something from Martha, we know that. Oh, Alan's coming here.
I went across the street and spoke with Martha and asked if she had something she'd like to share with you, and it's this. She hates to fall. She wanted to share it in person. She grew up surrounded by what she felt was the most beautiful art, and it was her father's art, and she feels her life is rich because of that.
Carl running. Her father was a noted maritime painter down in Connecticut.
I actually, my office is the bedroom, but I write there. But what I wanted to share is that this week, my granddaughter Callie, who just turned 11 and is starting sixth grade, wanted to do a vision board with me. And we would each do a vision board, and she told me what to do, which is you get a poster board, and then you have a bunch of magazines from the co-op, and then you cut things out, and it's very, very important when I cut things out, she said, not to have anything in mind, to just cut out whatever I'm drawn to and just keep cutting and cutting and cutting until I'm done cutting and I think I'm done. And she did this too. We also got a few embellishments from an art store that we had for decoration at the end. But it was a wonderful experience, not just because I shared it with Callie, but because I have something that is a vision that I didn't know I had. And my vision board is filled with windows, flying geese, and skies, and boots. My favorite being a pair of bright yellow boots. So that's collaborative art in a way that is two things, but she's putting hers in her room and I'm putting mine in mine.
Marjorie.
Thanks very much. Before I left New York, I had several jobs there, and I had an office. It was a nice wood-paneled office. But if anyone knows, it was south of Garden City and on Hempstead Turnpike. It was surrounded by fast food places and lots of traffic and offices and used car lots and so forth. So I wanted my office to look nice. And I had a Vermont Life calendar my brother sent me from Vermont. And then I had a poster from Switzerland which showed me the mountains of Switzerland. And then I chose some other things to put up there. And at some point I realized I was surrounded by beautiful landscapes, and I love photography. They don't have to be photographs, whatever. I was surrounded by mountains. And somebody said when I came back from vacationing in Vermont, do you ever think of living there? And I said, well, yeah, but I'd have to find a job. And the minute I saw an ad for a job in Vermont, I drove up to Rutland and interviewed, and that's how I got to Rutland. So the pictures gave a revelation to me. Anyway, so, and they were all beautiful pictures, but the theme was definitely mountains.
Thank you. I like the pastel over there. And I like it's like the spirit coming up out of the abyss or the deep of life or something, whatever it is. It's very evocative, and I like that it's not form, something specific. What I was looking at all your things that you subjected us to there. You know, that's your sharing, I'll say. And I would never, ever share any of that. I like people. And if you were to come to my house, you'll see 1,000 photographs or paintings, but it's always people. And I think how incredibly different our taste is. And not only would there be people, there would be a variety of Africans, Asians, White Americans, Native Americans, Black Americans, in color. I like to see them usually in their native outfit because of the incredible color of their, when they're wearing Irish kilts, that sort of thing. Whatever is native to those people. But you don't have any of that kind of, and I was just marveling at how incredibly different our taste is, but it's okay for you to be like that.
Well, Francois, I don't know if we're that different. It's when I see these things, of course, I see the people who did them or who I did them with. And I'm just not showing the people to all my visitors. I'm showing the things. So we really aren't that far apart. Chris.
And I'm kind of in the middle of both of you because my home is where my work has been for a long time, and it's where my art is, and so much of the art in my home is done by dear friends, family members, so when I look at that, it reminds me of them. I feel like they're closer to me, and also the stuff that maybe you really can't call art is more like tchotchkes, and but memories of places that we traveled over the years, so good times.
It's a beautiful summer day. I don't want to keep people too long. We have time for a couple more sharing if people have memories or important things they want. Marnie?
Well, for more than 30 years, my office, or at least my desk, was a classroom, and I would have to say that, and Laura was my student, so she could maybe verify this, but the space was full of what my students were creating, and that was incredibly spiritual for me to be part of the energy that always existed in my office.
Carl, what was the dean's office like at Middlebury when you were the dean?
I wasn't going to say anything because it's a clutter, but if you visit us, my office, the house. It's every space is covered with some kind of art of some kind, not very valuable art for the most part, but photographs, art, something evocative. Tchotchkes, is it? Bric-a-brac. So it's a, in my house, what is it? Something absorbs a vacuum. We vacuum. we cover it.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you for sharing. I hope anybody who was thinking of coming in during office hours for a visit is encouraged. I won't be at all offended if you don't look at me, but find yourself staring around at what's on the walls and asking what that might mean for you. And it's been such a blessing in my life to finally have a workspace where I can explore my spirit. So my prayer for you is that if you don't actually get that space as a separate room, that you find a way to create a space like that at home and be intentional about what's around you, what you look at when you look up. So our closing hymn,